3, 2, 1, go.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, a podcast from three Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. This is our Boba Fett Fridays, and we're going to be talking about episode 4, The Gathering Storm. And joining us today, we have a fourth Puerto Rican friend and big Boba Fett fan, Alberto from Radio Rebellion. Bienvenido, Alberto.
Yes, gracias, so gracias.
Bienvenido.
Yeah, I was ready to say there's a fourth Puerto Rican here, but you got me now.
So, yeah. I got it.
Yeah, very happy to be here, finally, with the triad.
Yeah, you know, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, the quartet is here. Yeah,
the quartet.
Yeah, it's always nice to round everything out. We started like the first episode with Alden. He's also Puerto Rican, so we had the fourth Puerto Rican there. Now we have another Puerto Rican here. So we like to keep it, you know, as Puerto Rican as possible. Not that we don't love our other friends, but there's something special when we all get together. Yeah, there's a lot of adobo. There's a lot of seasoning when we all come together. So it's great. It's great to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to be here. Like I said, can't wait to talk Boba Fett.
Yes.
And there is a lot to talk about, isn't there? Not just like in terms of the show itself, because I think episode 4 gave us a lot to talk about, but also discourse that's happening online about the Book of Boba Fett, which I think it's fair to kind of get into it a little bit, because we need to see like if some of the criticisms that are happening with the show are valid or not, especially from the point of view that we're looking at it. So why don't we start with our point of view before getting into other people's point of view and talk about The Gathering Storm. Alberto, you're our guest, so let's start with you. What did you think of The Gathering Storm? How did Chapter 4 resonate with you?
I did enjoy it. Just real quick, I've been enjoying the series so far. I'm not over the moon in love with it, as I, like you mentioned, huge Boba Fett fan since I can remember. So not that I had high expectations, but I'm there. Mm-hmm. Over the moon, yes, this is the greatest Star Wars story that's been told. But talking about The Gathering, I really enjoyed it, especially coming from episode 3, which was okay. It has its issues, which you guys talked about last time, and everyone talked about the thing with the Tuscan and how they kind of took a few steps back. But apart from the episode, in general, was okay. It wasn't great. It wasn't as bad as the discourse out there, but it was okay. The Gathering Storm, loved it. I love that it had enough time to read through the whole story, being like almost 50 minutes long. It's funny because my favorite part of the show so far has been all the flashbacks and these flashbacks.
Yeah.
Like 30%, I mean, like 60% of the show was just flashback. But at the same time, I wish that they moved the present time story a little bit faster. I think that's kind of lagging a little.
Yeah.
Because that's what I want to know. Okay, it's great to know what happened to Boba Fett's past. This show should be kind of where he's going. I think that's lacking a little bit. And I thought it was going to move a little bit more this week. We only got about 10 minutes of it, this meeting with the other family houses or the other gangsters out there. So I hope they kind of picks up a little bit with the present time and kind of leaves the flashbacks in the past. But overall, did enjoy it plenty, a lot to talk about, and can't wait for the next 3 episodes.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, especially with the focus. It seems like sometimes we've only had 4 episodes so far, so like we're past the halfway point, but it's 7 episodes, so it's not real. There's no real half point in it. Unless you consider the halfway point of the 4th episode, the halfway point of the series.
You gotta start doing math. No, I wasn't ready for it.
No. Neither was I. Math is not my forte. But it does feel like the show doesn't know what it wants to be, at least for me, definitely. Not that I'm not enjoying it, absolutely. I think it's a good show. It's enjoyable. More Star Wars is always good. Even if it weren't a great show, I would still like that there's Star Wars out there, because why wouldn't I want more of it? But I definitely think that the show can find what it wants to be more. If it wants to be a character study of Boba Fett without his armor, or if it wants to be like the power grab, you know, Godfather storyline that it wants to be like in some of the episodes. But Nani, what did you think of Gathering Storm?
I'm just going to talk about it in general now, because I disagree with you, actually. Sorry, Alberto. I haven't been a lifelong fan of Boba.
Those are the best now. The people that are going to go off now are the best.
Yeah. And I fell in love with Boba and Mandalorian. And I think that the show knows exactly what it is because it's right in the title. It's the book of Boba, trying to get Boba to where he is more complete in himself. Because before he was just a bounty hunter led around by people who, according to him in this episode, idiots sending me to slaughter. I'm probably smarter than them and I can figure out better ways to do all these things. So, you know, it was this character. And then you get the flashbacks, which shows him what it is to be part of a family and a tribe and have people and not be a loner. So that's why I think those flashbacks were really important. And I think now that we've caught up to the present, we're actually probably done with the flashbacks. So now we can propel whatever happens in the future. So I think it's all the stages of what makes Boba Boba and his book. Like it was like a book in the Bible, like the book of Boba. I think that it's all there. And I think that's why it actually works. And it might be slower than people were expecting, but I'm really, really enjoying it. And then especially this episode, which you can add the Book of Boba and Fennec, because we were, talked before that we weren't getting enough Fennec, and she was so amazing. And to see that relationship with them, which you saw more of like her just following him. And then this episode, it's more about her figuring out that she found her match, that it's not just about the life, that it's about finding somebody that's like worthy of her just being there and quitting the bounty hunter life. So we'll get to deep dive into it, but there's a lot about this episode that I really, really enjoyed.
I like what you said. I like what you said about the biblical aspect of how the title of the show, right, complements the narrative of how the episodes are going, especially because of how it starts, right? And we talked about it with Ty and MC when we were talking about the mythical aspects of Star Wars. And the show does start with a birth, right? It's the rebirth of Boba Fett coming from the belly of the beast. And when we were talking to MC and Ty, they talked that every time like you go inside a creature and are expelled from it, there's a transformation and a rebirth and how your character is crossing a threshold of some kind to become something else. So I do like it when you frame it that way, in that biblical sense, that mythical sense, because it does elevate Boba Fett, right, from how we've seen him before and how some fans want to keep him, which is like this one-dimensional badass, and by kind of destroying that and deconstructing him to build him up again, you actually make him a more complex and fuller character. So it's a good point.
Well, and he actually gets a second rebirth when he comes out of the Bacta tank completely healed. So we've seen three stages of Boba in this episode.
But is he completely healed? And we'll talk about that when
we'll talk about that too.
Hey, Mo, what did you think of chapter 4?
I think it was like you all said, like it's the rebirth. That's the whole aspect of, you know, we're seeing the healing and transformation of Boba. Like this is somebody building their legacy. Like we're seeing somebody who's been through their prime as a bounty hunter. They've lost everything. They've learned that by losing everything and like, you know, learning the value of like having a tribe and a family, which is what Star Wars has always been about, like find your found family.
Yeah.
And then the fact that, you know, the Tuskens were the first, like Boba never had a family. That's the tragic backstory of Boba. Like after the Clone Wars, Boba never had a family. Like maybe some partners and whatnot, but it's now at, you know, the elder age, the time where like it's more wise and like, you know, I've already learned that what's important is the tribe, and that's what Boba's doing, the legacy, and that's what we're seeing. I think like Manning says, like the show knows what it's doing. It is telling like you know, this is just like a very local story. I loved the fact that we see like this relationship with Fennec, and like it involves our respect. It isn't like something that's like, I mean, yeah, you know, you just got saved and you know, you're not, thanks to like you could see it as life debt or something, but it's not like Boba never Ghost, like, you know, I just need your help dealing with getting my chip and then dealing mm-hmm. with the Raiders. Then you do whatever you want. You're free. Like, I'm not mm-hmm. holding it to anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like, it's all about, that's what we need. That's the story we need. Our society needs, like, how can you build respect? How can you, you know, come together from different backgrounds and like develop a tribe? Because mm-hmm. it takes a tribe to raise children, and it takes a mm-hmm. tribe to raise our society. So this, I think it's a valid story worth being told.
I did like what you were saying about Fennec Shand and him letting her like decide her path and not having her be bound to him with a life debt because he saved her life, especially with the narrative that has been going on Twitter about the ship's name. We were discussing before starting the episode if we should even address it, but I think now we should, just because of what you said about Fennec and the life debt, which when you frame it that way, it kind of seems backwards that the ship would be called the Slave One if you're all of a sudden enslaving the person you saved into a life debt, right? So it kind of seems like it would make sense that Boba Fett would want to rename the ship. And I'm not saying that he did. I'm not saying that they have. It's still called the Slave One in the Star Wars data bank. And ultimately, it doesn't matter because the name was never mentioned in The Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. So it's just a ship's name. But in terms of the narrative of the series, it kind of would seem like Slave One is not an appropriate name for the ship of someone who was liberated by a group of indigenous people that, you know, are culturally enslaved by settlers, someone who set someone free from a life debt. So just conceptually, it seems like Slave One is not an appropriate ship for Boba Fett's ship, as the Lego would call it. What does everyone think about?
What was the new name?
Well, they Fire technically Spray. Don't have a name, but yeah, it's a, technically Fire Spray is like the category of ship.
Of the ship, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Millennium Falcon is what is it? YT-1300 light freighter, mm-hmm. whatever. So Slave okay. One is a fire spray, whatever.
Fire spray.
Yeah. Fire spray is 100 times cooler than Slave One, just in name. It's,
just I want a fire
spray. And we saw the power of the fire spray.
Yeah, well, yes. It was great. But like you said, Goose, Slave One was mentioned maybe twice in the Clone Wars and maybe in some comics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. I don't care. Like I said, I've been a fan forever. I have Slave One toys somewhere. I call it Slave One. I'll call it Fire Spray. It doesn't matter. It's just a name. And if it's the Lego packaging doesn't want to have Slave, and then next with age, 6 to 8, Slave One. Yeah, it doesn't make sense from marketing sense either.
Well, even from a collector point of view, it's like, wait, it makes, if you have it, now you have like something that's going to be more valuable. So make them change it, because now you have something that's more
right.
Go to eBay, selling 10 selfish. Years.
Yeah.
But yes, just like you said, Gustavo, it would make zero sense if his ship was still called Slave One after he spent so much time with the Tusken Raiders and the past two episodes was, okay, this is their land. You guys took it from them. If you want to pass through here, you got to talk to them first. Yeah, but my ship is still called Slave One because I used to be a jerk and whatever 20 years ago. And also, Bounty Hunter, he's not a slave trader, so... Mm-hmm. Why Slave One doesn't even match his previous occupation, right?
Yeah,
it was where they came when they came up with it, but it doesn't make sense for the story that they're telling.
It could have been called Hunter One, at least, as you know, it has to do with
makes a little bit.
Yeah, we could even argue maybe that was what Django called it, and now
and maybe Django felt like a slave, and that's why he named it that way, because he felt like a slave.
And
maybe now that Boba has been liberated, it has to, you know, grab you new life. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Like a lot of these people, you know, are so like, I'm not going to say what political side of the fence they are, because I don't like to make assumptions, but that's a good one because now he's liberated. So it's the Freedom One. Mm-hmm. What more American name can you have for you a Star Wars ship?
That's something you can do. Anybody can do. So.
That is something you can do. Like it happens to lots of ships in real life all the time. Like, other people buy it or get capricious and change it. It's a thing that happens. It's not a big, it's not like they changed Luke Skywalker's name to, you know, to like George Skywalker.
And even ships, there's maybe three ships in all of Star Wars that names are really important: the Falcon, the Ghost, and maybe Razor Crest, because they just got introduced. Luke Skywalker flies an X-Wing. And everyone has a Y-Wing and our A-Wing and TIE Fighters. Yeah, it's the fire spray. If you want to call it Slave One, that's fine. But this uproar on Twitter since last year, it's just ridiculous.
It's weird. It's weird. Yeah. And it's one of those things that's just like, that, like, okay, fine. If you're like upset because you like one name over the other, that's fine. You know, you can like something over something else. But to get so hell-bent out of shape about something that ultimately doesn't matter to the story, it's weird. That means that the story's not what matters. What matters is your outrage and the nitpick.
And
that you
the
find
labels. To... Yeah.
Right.
It's all about the labels and what you think is canon and not evolving the story at all whatsoever. And what the is important about the message and the characters evolving. So.
Absolutely.
But going back into the show now, after like our small, you know, philosophical Slave One tangent.
Yeah.
Obviously, like Alberto mentioned, 60% of the show was dedicated to like the flashbacks. So let's go into that a little bit, because I thought they were really fun. And so far, I think the best parts of the Book of Boba Fett have been the flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Episode 2, Chapter 2 has been my favorite episode so far, just because of how narratively it's so important for Boba's journey. And obviously the representational things that we talked about in that episode. If you haven't seen it, please go check it out. But here in Chapter 4, I thought it was really interesting, not to say that there weren't poignant moments and deep conversations between Fennec and Boba, but I think that one of the cooler things is that it's the video game episode. I feel it's like, okay, let's take Battlefront 2. Let's take Battlefront 2 and like mix it with the Book of Boba Fett and have Fennec Shand be the protagonist, because let's face it, she was the one that was did the heavy lifting in that action sequence. Apparently Boba forgot to fly the Slave One and he went all Galaxy all Quest. Exactly. He went all Galaxy Quest, crashing it everywhere. But I did love the sequence, right? Because it did feel like you're playing Battlefront 2. And one of the big things that Star Wars has always been about is having, you know, being so cool on screen that you want to be part of it and be a video game, you know, and like, you know, live those battles. So it's kind of like full circle. It's like, okay, we have the movies. You want to play it in a video game, you have the video game, and now the video game becomes the movie again, or the show in this case. So what did everyone think about that whole sequence, especially with some of the droids that we saw there, especially with maybe the General Grievous callback with the cook? Thoughts there? Alberto, you're a guest. Why don't we start with you?
I loved it. I love probe droids. If you see my show, my logo is a probe droid. So seeing Fennec Shand, I don't know how many gadgets she has in her sniper rifle or the daggers. She has this little probe droid or whatever that reminded me a little bit, of the one that Darth Maul used in Episode 1, even though these were bigger.
Yes. Because it's later in the timeline, so the technology has shrunken.
Yeah. It's like all the phones used to be big, then weren't small, and then started going big again. But I love the whole sequence. Just, okay, we don't know anything. How many people are inside the palace? Let's send this droid to find out. And then when they go in, I love that sequence with the chef droid. And I love that if you have the captions, it says chef droid, sous chef droid. Chef.
Like,
And then the little rat catcher was the best with the little, the little rabbit. So it's some of those fun Star Wars moments that we all love, right? We always say a lot of people, oh, Star Wars is for kids or the younger generation. This was kind of, okay, this is our time to be silly and have this little chase inside the kitchen, which was great. We had that Grievous droid come out. So that sequence was fine. But of course, it's the battle at the end trying to get the ship. And it shows how much of a badass Fennec Shand is. And like you said, Nani, this is her episode. And you, Gustavo. She's the one that did everything in this episode, especially in that scene. She told Boba, just make sure that ship can fly. And he didn't do anything else. She took out like 20 guys and then was the one that opened the gate so he can crush everything and just go get out. But it was a great action scene coming from first a little kind of silly sequence to then a real action.
Yeah.
Especially from last week's. I mean, I'm not bashing it. But it was kind of a silly, the chase sequence from last week that people were complaining how slow it was. And then this one's just like, okay, fine, we'll give you like a more action-packed thing.
Which
kind of is crazy because in this one, you actually know how it turns out because you know Boba ends up getting the slave one. Because we saw in Mando and there's still, you know, threats and you feel the action and you're like immersed in it. So I thought that was really good. But I actually want to pay it right before I start talking about the action scene, like when he first finds Fennec. I don't know if you guys noticed that right before, you know, he's with the Bantha and you see the flash from the moment that happens in the Mando, and then right before the second flash happens, there's a twinge from the Mando soundtrack. It was so good right there. And then you're like, oh, we're getting Fennec and now we're gonna find out how it is. And then once we go into like that game sequence, the first thing I saw it was, this is a stealth mode. I would probably get everybody murdered before we even got to the gates because I'm terrible at stealth mode.
Same.
No.
In Ghost of Tsushima, I cannot do the stealth stuff. I just go full samurai sword. Like I'm fighting everybody. I'm sorry.
I mean, which is eventually what happened, right? Because it goes from stealth mode to like being overwhelmed. But I do really love that kitchen scene because not only was the Grievous, as soon as he opened his arms, I was like, are they really making fun of Grievous? And then he looks like so threatened with all those like massive butcher knives. And then Fennec just like comes up behind, slashes his throat. And it's like, wait, are they trying to say that Obi-Wan and everybody else was like an ass? Because that's how easy it is to take care of Grievous. So I thought it was a cool nod to, hey, Fennec is better than you guys.
And I don't disagree with that.
Oh, it's brains
and muscle, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
And he saw that right away. He said, I need brains, I need muscle, and you have everything. So I loved it. And then well, I especially love that one part when Boba has no idea how to actually get out, and she's like, I got it, start lifting the door. Yeah, and then like, she already saw it, shoots it, and then as the door goes up and she just looks at it like, I got it. So
She does save him like in both of the sequences that happen in the episode, one with the ship where she, you know, does the counterweight so that the ship can get out, and then when they're in the Sarlacc and she's like, okay, well, I gotta help him out again because he doesn't know what he's doing, and then puts the seismic charge
and
down.
This is like 5 hours after major surgery that she had, and she's already
good to go.
And Boba Fett needs to back that tank. She's like, come on, we gotta go, we gotta hurry.
That's why we live in the Ming-Na Wen supremacy. So like more of her, please. Like that's why actually this was an episode that I felt was a kind of redemption for Ming-Na Wen, because for the last 3 episodes, she's been there, she's been cool, but I felt that she's been underutilized. But she
kind of sidelined a little bit.
But she finally gets to shine in this episode, not as much as I would want her to shine, even though I know the show is called The Book of Boba Fett, so he's the main character, but I still feel that they're co-equals at this point, and like you can't have one without the other. So I want to see more of her. I'm glad that we saw as much as she did, as much as we did about from her this episode, but I want more. Mo, what did you think about our video game sequence?
I love like the how they're just embracing it at this moment. Like it's felt this way since the beginning, and now it's just like, you know, we're playing a Boba Fett RPG. And I was thinking about that like last night. I was like, this will be a great like Boba Fett RPG. Everybody, you can choose to be the evil Boba or the good Boba or neutral Boba.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy. Like just go with it. And this is what we're seeing. We're seeing like Boba Fett play the good character in an RPG, and you know, I love it. It's like all the like I actually saw that episode with my mom, and we were laughing at the whole like sequence, but it wasn't a good way. It was like, you know, it was fantastic.
Fun.
Yes. Like,
it was fun.
It's fun. It's uplifting. It's like, this is what Star Wars is about. Like. Yeah. It's, there's silliness, but there's also seriousness, and that's the balance. Of it. Like,
yeah, just turn himself off. He didn't want to, don't kill me. You're Boba Fett. I'll just turn myself off. I don't need to say anything.
Yeah,
That's why I think we'll see him again. He's like, okay, now.
He's
just
there.
Myself off.
Well, we saw it at the end.
Yeah,
huh?
At the end, when they're in the present time, he's talking to all the other family heads. He's the one under the table. So
he was there. Yeah,
he was there. Like,
there we go.
It's already part of Boba family.
And speaking of family, though, Mo, you had said something interesting that I meant to like bring up, and it's about Boba losing family, especially with the Tuskens, which, well, we know how we feel about the Tuskens being slaughtered. But the interesting thing is that Boba lost his family twice, right? The only family that he had before the Tuskens was Jango, and it was a clone of him who was still his father. And then he loses him before he can, you know, have a fully developed relationship with him, because, you know, not to say that children can't have a full relationship with their parents, but at least in my experience, you have a fulfilled relationship with parents once you become an adult and you can be like one-to-one with them and kind of see them as people instead of parents. And Boba never had that with Jango. He just saw him as the bounty hunter that always left because he had to go to work.
I think that's part of those, sorry to cut you off, those Camino flashbacks. It's him just saying, Jango, leave. We don't know. He didn't know when he was coming back, and maybe next time was Dionysus and he died. That relationship wasn't very there. Possible. A kid, he wanted that.
And
and who's his next of kin? Technically himself, right? A million times, however many times he was cloned. And he has no...
Well, how would that like also like affect you, your mentality as well, their sense of self? Because you were walking around and you will see yourself everywhere.
Yeah.
And then you will see your dad everywhere. And then you will also see yourself everywhere. It's like...
But it's like, interesting because he never sent that. Like, there's a Clone Wars episode, right, where Boba infiltrates like the clones. But he never sympathizes that much with the clones. And as I think, I mean, he does to an extent. But I think it's interesting to view that a relationship, because Boba is a clone, but he's not a clone like the other clones. And he was raised by his father to be a bounty hunter, but these other clones are like Boba, so they have the same skills, but they're raised to follow rules, and Boba doesn't follow rules. So like they're the same but completely different, as opposed to when he's being raised by the other bounty hunters later in the Clone Wars with Aura Singh and Bosk and all these guys. They're more like Boba in terms of like the skills and career path than the clones, but they're not so they're opposite sides of family. One is blood and one is a career family, I guess. But they're not really his family because he doesn't have a connection to either of them. So he's, you know, I feel he's kind of a Puerto Rican in that sense. he's a Puerto Rican. He's like one of a Puerto Rican when they're like in the States. It's just like, you're from Puerto Rico, but you're in the States, but you're an American citizen, but you're not really an American because your culture is different. But when you spend so much time in the States and you go back to Puerto Rico, you're Puerto Rican, but you're not part of it anymore because he's been away from it for so long. So that's Boba Fett to me. Boba Fett, he may be Maori, but he's an honorary Puerto Rican.
Okay. Honorary Puerto Rican.
So Temuera Morrison, you can have some Don Q or some Palo Viejo with us whenever you want.
Nice. It's still Christmas. We'll have some coquito.
Some pitorro. Yeah, we'll do it. So, and it's on the house. You don't have to pay for anything.
I want to ask you guys, because we're talking about the flashbacks. Do you think, because I was lost in how much time had passed. I thought he maybe spent 2 or 3 days in the Sarlacc, maybe a week or so with the Tuskens. But no, it's been 5 years if he's already
been 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel that this kind of passage of time was kind of weird the way they showed it, or were you guys kind of weren't bothered by it?
I feel like they could have done a better job at showing that the time he spent with the Tuskens was longer. Like maybe by showing that kid Tusken grow up a little. So like maybe not grow up to adulthood, but see him as baby Tusken and then teenage Tusken.
I mean,
so you understand that there's some time passage, but I mean, I think it's appropriate that the time that passed. But
it's
I think
the way that they showed it was kind of, really? It's been 5 years already? But
and whatever. I actually think he spent way more time in the Sarlacc pit than we think he did. He was just being protected by the Beskar. So we don't know. We don't really know how long he was in there.
I hope I that, that it was less than a week.
God. I mean, yeah, well, how long could he survive in there unless the Sarlacc was keeping him alive? There's no food, there's no water. Was the Sarlacc keeping him alive to digest him over 1,000 years? And exactly, then, yeah, he spent 2 years in the Sarlacc and then he got out. But, well, I don't know. Anyway, the Sarlacc is gone. The Sarlacc is dead. God exploded. And God was what was coming to him or her. I don't know.
How did you guys feel about the beak being brought back? Because I did not like that it was like the CGI beak again. I really liked when we see Boba waking up and it's just like this like intestine kind of looking thing. Mm-hmm. And that was way more terrifying than suddenly doing the beak thing from the rehashed version. So that I just did not enjoy. So I kind of want your guys' opinion.
I love the beak, especially because like the CGI was so much better than Return of the Jedi. This is one of the things.
It was.
It's like the huts that we saw, the twins. The CGI on those huts is, I don't care what the haters are saying, that, oh, the puppets. It's like, fine, the puppet's better, but the CGI doesn't mean that the CGI is bad. Can we stop with that fiction that just because something is like a puppet practical. Is automatically better. It's like, in most cases, sure, like practical when enhanced with CGI. Well, practical is usually better, but when you enhance the practical with CGI, it's even better still. But whatever, I digress. The point is, the CGI twins looked awesome. I thought they were the best CGI huts we've seen, because the CGI huts that we got in A New Hope just looked atrocious. And in my mind, it's just like, okay, Disney, I understand that you don't want to like revert the changes that Lucas did for the special editions. I'm not saying you need to do it. I'm saying you could go back and fix it. So why don't you go back to A New Hope and just change Jabba to look better? Same thing with the Sarlacc. The Sarlacc in Return of the Jedi kind of looked a little wonky because of the CGI. And the CGI, like in Book of Boba, looked amazing. And to your point, Nani, I think that, I don't know if this was on Star Wars Explained or I don't know which channel, but they framed it in a way that I think I agree with. It's kind of, they were saying that they're kind of giving us best of both worlds. They showed us the Sarlacc without the beak and without the tentacles, but then they also gave us the tentacles because that's what's canon. So it's kind of like both. You get to see it both ways so that no one is happy, but no one is miserable.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there. I don't like the beak in Return of the Jedi. It just looks off-putting. That's why. There's no need to add the beak in Return of the Jedi. It adds nothing to the scene. Yeah. But it worked for me in Book of Boba. It looked a lot better. And the ship looked great over the whole Sarlacc getting pulled in by the tentacles. And it's a good jump scare. Mm-hmm. Seeing the beak come. I was watching it with my daughter. And she's like, something's going to move. And as soon as that shoot out, she jumps back. I told you. So it worked in that sense. And it gives a little bit more of an action scene. If you just tentacles pulling it down, maybe not as much as it trying to claw out Fennec and break the glass.
Yeah.
But yeah, if it wasn't added in Return of the Jedi, then yeah, there was no need to put it here, but it does look pretty good. And for the huts, they're saving the puppet hut for Andor.
Andor. So, that's what I've heard him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's difficult. I'm pretty sure it might be even more expensive to build two puppet huts
and carry them around. Yeah.
For 2 minutes of screen time.
And like
put five people inside each one to move them. And even during the first episode, it looked a little weird. They're out in the sun. We've never really seen huts in the sun. So that skin is kind of weird. But it's in the second one, it did look a lot better. Maybe my eyes adjusted, but it worked a lot better that second episode.
Yeah. And the Rancor was a practical puppet, and it was done by Phil Tippett, the same animator from the original Star Wars movies. It's kind of like there is, you know, like a balance between what's practical and what's CGI. So like, I don't know. I think that it's like people get hung up on like the wrong things to criticize, but it's interesting when you were talking about the jump scare with the Sarlacc. One of the things that I was thinking of, even like in the first viewing, that I was thinking about is like Boba is still not 100% himself yet. He's still learning. You know, he just learned how to be a Tusken He knew how to be a bounty hunter. Now he's kind of learning how to be himself, right? Because before, when he was a bounty hunter, he was like living up to his father's legacy. And now he's just trying to live up to himself and what he's learned from the Tuscans. So that's why I thought it was a little odd in terms of his decision-making process that he would just put the ship completely in the Sarlacc pit when he knows that if you have a solid object covering a source of light, you will immediately get darkness. So when he said that, oh, damn, I can't see a thing. I'm like, Boba, come on. Yeah. I don't want to be one of those people that are nitpicking, but come on.
As he was getting closer and starting to get darker, like, they better have some lights. And when he said that, I'm like, dude, what were you expecting, right?
Yeah. Like, turn on the lights before. I mean, you should know that this is the consequence of like moving the ship and, you know, totally eclipsing the Sarlacc pit. But again, that fine. It doesn't detract from the scene because the scene was awesome.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it means anything, but there were three lines that he said twice throughout the entire episode. He called himself Boba Fett, which he had never really done before, twice. And it makes you think a little bit of Game of Thrones, when they would call themselves kings, and it's like nobody who calls himself a king is actually a king. So it's like him kind of trying to convince himself again that he is still Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And then he does the I can't see anything when he's in the hangar, and then he does it again in the Sarlacc pit. Like there's something he's forgotten about his skills that he's trying to get back. And he also does the whole we've been bossed around by people that are stupider than us, more stupid than us. He does it twice also to Fennec during the episode. So it's like he's trying to convince himself about certain things throughout this episode. I think this is a very transitory episode of what his character is going to be for the rest of the series. So I think it was on purpose that they did it that way, because I mean, how terrifying is it that he still carries all those scars? He doesn't have his armor. He lost his tribe, and he goes back to the source of his own personal hell just to get his armor back, because he feels like the only way for him to be able to build another tribe is to have the power of that armor with him. So
yes,
I don't know.
And to that, to that point, I had actually written something when I was like, you know, I got my little notes. When I was watching the episode for the first time, one of the things that I thought was interesting when he went to the Sarlacc, which I think it's kind of metaphorical, right? For like where he is, especially in this episode. And it made me think of Maz Kanata in Force Awakens when she's talking to Rey, and Rey just wants to go back to Jakku. And what Maz told Rey is just like, the belonging you seek is not, you know, in the path behind you, it is ahead. And I think that's where Boba Fett is right now. He lost everything. So he's kind of like in the same place he was in Attack of the Clones when Jango got his boom head gone. When that happened, he lost everything and he had to like find his belonging. And the only belonging that he had in Attack of the Clones was the father that he lost. So he went to that past and that past became his present. So he became that bounty hunter. And now he's in that same place, right? He lost everything. He lost his tribe, he lost his armor. So he's trying to kind of find that belonging. And the only way he knows how to find it is to go back to what he knows. And the last thing that he knows where he felt complete was where he lost everything. So it's the Sarlacc pit. And Mo slapped up, fell. So everyone that's listening to the podcast, Mo slapped up, fell. So this was a hilarious moment. Yeah. And it was good because I felt really good about what I was saying here. And then like, we got a little comedic at timing. So.
Where's that rat catcher down there just knocking everything down?
But yeah, Boba Fett goes back to the place where he lost everything to kind of find himself. And he has to realize that the thing that gives meaning to you is not the things that where you lost things. It is in that road ahead, which is the road that he's traveling with Fennec on. And that's why I would want to, in terms of his, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, what I would want for him is to realize that he should not be Daimyo or Daimyo or however you say it. That's what he thinks he wants for himself. It's like the wants and need. What he wants is to be Daimyo because that's what he thinks, but what he needs is to just relax. And I think maybe there should be a role reversal and, you know, Boba becomes a house husband. And Fennec becomes a Daimyo, and she becomes the leader, and he just takes it easy for a little while.
I think he, and it's shown that Fennec can handle herself a little bit better, at least right now, than him. But I think what Nani has brought up a few times, it's extremely important when he's saying he's doing this for that reason, that stupider people or stupid people out there that have been our bosses have been sending us to do stupid jobs for years, and how many more of us have to die? I'm going to be in charge so this doesn't happen again. So maybe it's not, I want to be the leader because, I'm the big bad guy now. No, I want to make sure that our kind, bounty hunters, assassins, or whatever, are taken care of and only go on jobs that we can actually come back alive, and it's good for us, not for someone else. So I think that's, it changes what a lot of people have been saying. Oh, this Boba Fett is not the same. He's not ruthless. He's not this or that. That's not him. He now wants to take care of everyone else, because for years they've been working for stupid people, sending them on bad jobs. And this has to change now. So I think that's why he wants to be daimyo or whatever. But unfortunately, he has to deal with the pikes and everyone else that's still here and haven't showed up. And then hopefully then he can relax and just have someone.
I completely
agree with you on Bedfellow. Because I think he's only doing being daimyo as a means to an end, because he wants to change the system. And the only way to change the system is from within. So I don't think he wants to permanently do that role. I think he actually just wants to change how everything works. So I definitely agree with you. And sorry, but I cut you off, Goose.
No, it's fine. Two things about that. One thing is about what you were saying, Alberto, about everyone being like, the badass Boba Fett that I remember. It's just like, okay, dude, come on, bro.
Go back.
Boba Fett in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. I mean, no disrespect. He looked awesome. And like, you know, it was pretty cool. It's an impressionable look when you're like 12 years old. I get it. But you were 12 years old. Grow up. The most badass thing that Boba Fett did was just shoot at Luke maybe once, try to shoot at Chewbacca, and then Vader stops him. And then fly off. That's it. Because then what happens in Return of the Jedi? He falls into a butthole in the sand. I mean, he does. And he was knocked in there by a blind man. Okay. So let's stop this fiction that Boba Fett was some mythical badass. It happened in the books and the comics. Okay, fine. But in the movies, he never says Slave One, and he never does anything that, you know, deserves so much mythical, you know, respect.
Yeah, there was someone on Twitter, I don't know who, that put a picture of him just flying in the background when Luke is kicking the other guy and missing by 2 feet, and Boba just flying in the background, and someone put a caption, oh, here's Boba being a badass in the real trilogy, just flying to his death. It's like, yeah, come on, it's true.
Like, and that's no disrespect. I think Boba looked awesome. Well, I mean, and I liked him.
How awesome was it though when he first recovers the ship and you see all the bikers, and then from the far away you see the ship, like very, very small, and then just comes in and just destroys everyone. Come on. That was badass. Mm-hmm. That was Boba Fett being a badass.
Very much. But to that, go ahead.
Oh, no.
You okay, Mo? You okay down there?
Everything fell down.
I hope nothing's cracked. No, but I was going to say was to like Nani's point about like Boba's ulterior motives with being daimyo. And I think, which I think it's possibly true, because I think the Tusken narrative isn't over. So, and I think this whole Nikto destroying with Slave One is the red herring, because Fennec says it right in the beginning of the episode. She's like, band of raiders destroy a tribe Tuskens? Of Tuskens. That doesn't seem likely. Mm-hmm. So that I think that's kind of a setup to more in that story, which I hope so, because I think we need hashtag justice for Tusken Raiders. make it happen.
Yes.
So absolutely. I think that's a plot hole a plot thread that I think still needs to be developed. Bamo, you were going to say something. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I was just like thinking of like, you know, what Nani said, like we saw like prime, like Boba being like badass. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, we also see like Boba respecting the Bantha and like being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that whole scene of like, you know, almost like old friend, and like, I was like, oh, and then I'm setting you free, and like go have a bunch of babies, and the whole, that whole scene was like so heartwarming at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like this, you know, this is what we're seeing. We're getting the Boba that's everything, you know, a little mm-hmm. bit of badass because, you know, he had to do stupid jobs for stupid people. Mm-hmm. But now you're seeing like, this is the true Boba. This is what mm-hmm. wants to flourish. And I think that's what Fennec sees in all this. That's like,
yeah.
I think that's like what that whole this like dynamic that's going on, almost like, and I'm like, Boba's like almost like offering, like it's like, damn, it's like wedding vows, like Boba's like,
yeah,
spinning out there, like putting people to shame, like.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think the most important thing about what you were saying about the beasts, and with beasts, I'm referring to the Bantha and the Rancor, is that it's something that you want to see, right? It's like the compassion yeah. towards beasts, because Star Wars usually dispatches beasts. You know, just, like, oh, beasts are disposable.
Every alien just kill it.
Right. But I think the interesting and important thing about this is Boba's empathy to these creatures, because, and I mean, it's kind of weird to like say it, but it kind of the Tuskens are part of all of this, because it's how Boba is viewed by everyone, right? He's like this outsider, he's a beast, right? He's like this hunter that's been that badass that everyone is afraid of. And in a sense, it's disposable, because a bounty hunter is like, oh, you're dead, you're the next one. And mm-hmm. to have Boba Fett see all these beasts and see how everyone's afraid of them and treat them as one-dimensional characters, and then him mm-hmm. giving him like nuance, and giving, or as Shrek would say, giving them layers like an onion, I think is very poignant, because then it's one-to-one with his story. Like the way he's treating the Bantha, the way he's treating the Rancor, it's how the show is treating Boba Fett. Like he is the beast, you know, he is the bounty, fearless, like a bounty hunter that kills everybody. But is he, or is he actually like just a sweet boy that wants to imprint on someone and, you know, be, you know, go out for a ride?
Yeah.
And he totally missed Mo's mentioning of the fact that Boba Fett basically gave marriage vows to Fennec. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's like, I will be loyal. Well, she's still with him.
Maybe she wants an open relationship.
No, okay. But come on, how awesome is it that he doesn't really, it's like your life debt is done. I only expect loyalty, and I will lay down my life protecting you.
Yeah, he said, come I wrote on. It down.
Death to us part. Yeah.
Yeah, he says, yeah, I pledge my life to protect yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you need.
Come on.
That's all you need. We think Disney's going to let them kiss.
Look. They better. No, people out there in the geeky waffle on those is hashtag Bonek. Yeah. You know, you're Bonek and together. I'm part of that. I not want to do a lot of ships, like relationships out there.
Yeah.
But this is one that, come on, you got to give it to the fans. It has to happen.
I'm all for this one too. Yeah, I'm all for
like,
this.
Like Lucasfilm has robbed everyone of enough live action couples, you know, Poe and Finn, Rey and Ben. So it's just like, give something back. Yeah. Give it back.
Give and something finally, to not like, you know, your typical like, oh, romantic. Like it's just, you know, just a relationship built out of respect and like,
exactly.
not like infatuation or like, this whole like it's
mm-hmm. he even did a bridal carry, if I'm not mistaken.
That's
right. Carries her, like on the just married car, and takes her, you know, to get modified.
The Bantha.
gives her
which actually I thought it was really cool, that detail about like the modification, because it was mostly used for like aesthetics and stuff and you know, enhancing yourself, and then it was actually used in a life-saving procedure. I thought there was something really cool about that. Mm-hmm. And I love like the surgery. The whole scene was really cool.
And I like that it was like framed like a tattoo parlor. Yes. I thought it was just awesome.
Because a lot of people had issues with the Vespa squad that last episode, right? Oh, they're not part of Tatooine, blah, blah, blah. But then here you see why. There's this subculture, same as the tattoo culture. You can call it a parlor, same as a tattoo parlor.
Yeah.
So yeah, it belongs in Tatooine. It's this subculture, this community that wants to enhance themselves, and seeing it now, it kind of brings life to those guys that we saw before, the mods that are now out there looking for the mayor. Mm-hmm. Now it makes sense. And that scene was great. And then Boba, oh, you're not going to cover that up or and you're, how yeah. are you gonna cover this great work again? You got a yeah. tattoo, you gotta
I mean it. But, yeah. but that's Why? A commentary on tattoos also, right? Just yeah. like of people, you know, people
well, and the soundtrack was fantastic because it had the mix of like yeah, techno yeah. combined with the actual soundtrack, so it kind of worked mm-hmm. in a very weird awesome way. And mm-hmm. I actually mm-hmm. I loved the speeder bikes. I mean, the chase was kind of boring, I will say that, but I kind of love the colors. It made me feel like it was like Power Ranger colors in the middle of Tatooine.
The Power Rangers,
so
they were like both of them yes. Power Rangers.
It was great. It's like, I feel like if you're a nerd, you should appreciate that. Like yeah. Power Rangers yeah. and Tatooine.
But one of the best takes I've seen, and actually I appreciate that you're bringing this up, Nanny, because mm-hmm. one of the best takes, and not to go back into chapter 3 so much, but I think it's still important to bring up, because Alberto had this take actually on Twitter, which I thought was genius when he said it, is when he, you know, obviously Star Wars is historical in the sense that everything that is put in Star Wars is a reference to something that mm-hmm. is real or happened, or it's, you know, there's a one-to-one relationship with everything that's in Star Wars. Either, you know, Darth Vader's suit is based on samurai suits, all the housing in Mos Eisley is based on, you know, Tunisian architecture from, you know, from the time. So one of the things that Alberto said was that all of those bikes, all those colorful chromy bikes, are references to Cuban cars from like the 50s
yeah.
that are still like kept up new, and they're still shiny, and they're, you know, very representative of like a group of people that are trying to maintain a sort of image in this dilapidated kind of like rundown place, which I thought was kind of like great. I was like, god damn, why didn't I think of that?
Alberto,
I don't know if you want to like speak more to that.
So this is where I'm gonna be one of those people that Boba Fett will say is stupid people that us have been sending mm-hmm. us some bad jobs, because I don't have this great story behind it. Mm-hmm. But I knew I'd seen this before, and I started thinking and looking, where have I seen kind of colorful cars or colorful bikes out there with a background that kind of doesn't fit, this dilapidated? And then it kind of clicked, yes, in Cuba, this happens. This is all those old time 50s and 60s cars are out there. And then the first image that I searched were the ones that I found. So look, there it is. And what I was trying to say is they might not fit in Star Wars like you think, or in Tatooine, but look, it happens in real world. And like you just said, Star Wars and the real world, there's a one-to-one to it. So mm-hmm. was this inspiration to it? I don't know. But to everyone saying they don't fit in Star Wars, they don't fit on Tatooine, everyone, even myself, had these stories. Oh, maybe they came from Coruscant and their parents are rich and they are just kind of cashing out whatever.
They're from the suburbs. No, yeah.
yeah. Yeah. But maybe it's as simple as this other reason. But then with this episode today, I mean, from Wednesday, it kind of changes that narrative a little bit. It makes sense now that why they fit in Star Wars mm-hmm. and in Tatooine. But for last week, if you want to look again for a real world parallel, you don't have to look that far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I especially like the framing of it with chapter 4 as a tattoo parlor, because mm-hmm. what is like a tattoo culture, if not counterculture and subculture mm-hmm. to an extent, especially like maybe 20 years, well, I mean, now it's a little more mainstream, but it's still not, you know, as part of like the mainstream as, you know, most of society would want it to, well, not most of society, but like most of the acceptance that we would want for everybody. But to present it in that light, it's like, yeah, I mean, there's a group of people that aren't as accepted by other people because they look different.
Yeah.
And it extends to, in this sense, it's like, yeah, they don't have ink in their skin. They literally have machines on their skin and different body parts. So it kind of would make sense, right, that we haven't seen them in a way, because they're not the protagonists of most stories, just like in some way, like a lot of people that have tattoos aren't like the main protagonist and a lot of the things that happen in real life. So it's totally plausible. And especially when you compare it with Coruscant and Attack of the Clones, when they go into the deeper underground levels, and those deeper underground levels are the ones that are neon and colorful. Mm-hmm. It's not the yeah. main levels, where the Senate is and where Padme is.
The upper levels were boring downstairs.
That's where the party's happening. Oh yeah,
exactly. So every place on Earth has counterculture. So mm-hmm. it makes sense that there's a group of people that are doing the opposite of what everyone else is doing. So it's a nothing burger, I feel, in this whole speeder bike thing.
Okay. Well, we've been dragging on for a while. I know. I love it. I love all the tangents, but we can go on for a while. Everybody's going to be bored. Let's go to the present on the episode. We have that whole him being like the godfather, mm-hmm. you know, at the table. He has now the bikers on his side. He has Krasanthan on his side, which is fantastic. I'm so happy because he's such a badass. And he does this whole meeting. What everybody think about that whole godfather table scene?
Before the Godfather, I love that part. I'm so glad that we still keep getting Max Rebo back to back.
Oh yeah, get it, Max.
keep bringing Max. Like, don't know. But I love that whole scene because it felt again like going back to that RPG relationship. Like mm-hmm. I felt like that scene where, you know, you can Boba could have said different things.
Intervene.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know what, let's play it all out, see like it's almost like you can see that Boba also understands and has like that, just I want to see how everybody reacts before I have to like, and it's the whole like intro and like Fennec being the mm-hmm. hostess and like just pumping up like, oh, this is why Boba is like, you're,
this is what happened for Tuna. Has this thrown illegally until Boba Fett came. Look at him.
Are you presenting a car?
I want to get to like Nani, what you were saying about the Godfather scene, but since we were talking about the chrysanthemum scene and Madame Garza's, you know,
Emporium,
watering hole, cantina. Whatever you call it,
Mexino, everything.
I wanted to leave that for like the end, because I think, at least for me, that was the most important scene in the episode, and not for what it does to set things up, but for what it does in terms of themes that we might see moving forward. Because I think the most important thing that happened in that episode is like the conversation between her and Krasanthan, because she's trying to convince him to kind of move away from the life that he's known of being the gladiator, being the killer. Like, just be more compassionate, let it go, just find the higher ground. And then Krasanthan being like, nah, I'm just going to rip this guy's arm off. And for me, that was very poignant, because when I saw that, I'm like, and especially with Boba seeing that, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is talking about what Boba wants to do. Boba is trying to be what Madame Garza is trying to do, which mm-hmm. is change natures. And Krasanthan didn't change his nature. So I wonder if that's kind of like a foreshadowing of somehow of what's going to happen in the future of like Boba Fett trying to do something.
I don't necessarily think he didn't change his nature. He just ripped one arm off. Ooh. He could have destroyed everybody there and then decided to work for Boba. So, I mean, something could have gotten in there that, you know, it works. Change just doesn't happen overnight. You have to work at it. So, I mean.
And you start presenting like thinking about it and like, just like.
Yeah,
like all the Wookiee mm-hmm. expressions were there.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah.
True.
Yeah,
what did you think of that scene?
So I think when you said Boba's just waiting and watching, he was doing a job interview, right? So mm-hmm. we're looking at Placenta, mm-hmm. and let's see if he can really defend himself with these Trandoshans that are not really fighters out there, just gambling or whatever.
Right.
Kicked their butt. But I love when I first watch it and you see Krasanthan just getting madder and madder, looking at the Trandoshans. And why is he so angry? Is he drunk? He doesn't like that they're winning. But then it clicked. No, because Trandoshans keep Wookiee's leg. Mm-hmm. And he sees that. He's like, no, I'm going to end this right now. And he washes the floor with all of them. Then that one hit him upside the head with a little glass bottle. It's like, really, dude? I love his brass knuckle, those knuckle dusters or whatever.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Yes. And he just washes everyone out. And then, like you said, Garza's trying to calm him down. He's like, no, that's okay. Rips one arm, just walks out, looks at Boba like, all right, thank you for liberating me, but I'm peace out. And then, you want to work with me? Yes, please. So the whole thing, just action-wise, was great. But the comment, like you said, Gustavo, with Garza trying to calm him down and everything that she said, this is a different time period now. It's not the gladiator pits mm-hmm. with Boba there. I think it's that double message. And also to the fans, like we've been saying the whole episode, that people complaining that this is not the Boba Fett that we grew up with. No, no, it's a different time for a different people out there, for a different Boba Fett. Accept it or get out.
Yeah.
It's like he's older. He grew up. Yeah. I mean, and he's trying to see what his surroundings are and who he can count on. He already knows now that she has like democratic skills, and it's actually pretty good at it. That Chrysanthemum can actually control himself, because again, he could have not ripped one arm. He could have ripped that head completely, or, you know, every single limb of all of them. Yeah. So I think he's just trying to test the waters and see how far he can go, which transitions again now into the Godfather scene.
So I love the Godfather scene, especially because I forgot about the Rancor, and when the, what is it, that Clatoon is saying, oh, what's keeping us from killing you and taking everything you have? And then that claw comes out. Oh, yeah, that's right. There's a huge Rancor down there. Oh, it's a little bit.
It was actually even better, because everybody, you see everybody just looking at Boba, like, what do you, what can you do to boss us around? Then everybody like, pans to him, a moment of silence.
He's like, and I don't know, what can I do?
Yes, like,
and then it's like, oh, he's probably hungry here. And everybody's just like, what?
Yeah. He's like, I could have had everyone meet at the dining room, but I conveniently put the dining table over the Rancor
pit. On top of the entire Rancor pit. Yeah. It was so good.
I'll let you all leave. That's what I want.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, it made me feel so much like it was like the Godfather just putting a dead horse's head on the dining table. That's basically the same effect that Rancor had. So that was great.
Yeah, I think the only problem I have with the scene wasn't the scene itself, is that I still feel like most of the things that are happening in the present, which I feel weird saying the present in a sci-fi setting, but whatever, in the present haven't felt earned so much, because there haven't been as much time to develop it as we've had for the flashbacks. So to like have those things happen in the way that they're happening, and like have kind of the antagonism or conflict that we have, like the different families, doesn't feel earned, at least to me, because it's like, okay, well, we haven't seen you interact with these people before. So I don't, you know, it doesn't feel like an organic scene as much as I would like it to be. Because if we compare it to The Godfather, I mean, obviously that movie is like 3 hours long and like it's focused on those things. But in The Godfather, you start seeing like those families early on and start seeing kind of those relationships and what's happening. So like when those meetings happen, you're like, okay.
That's why I kind of disagree with you, because since you are a fan of mob movies, you know how they work. And Boba was very adamant. The first time in this episode, I think he got out of the back to tank, he was like, Fennec tells him, you don't need to go outside right now. And he says, power loves a vacuum.
He hates a vacuum.
And you have to go there to fulfill the vacuum.
Love and hate, same thing.
Love and hate, same thing, whatever. Sorry, I got the line wrong. but the sentiment is the same. Like, they will thrive from a vacuum, or destroy a vacuum, or do whatever they did. And so that's what Boba's trying to do. He's trying to capitalize on that. And the fact that Bib Fortuna never had the kind of power that Jabba the Hutt had. It was like tentative alliances and everything. And I think Boba knew exactly what he was getting into when he started this meeting. He knew they weren't going to help him, but he had to start high. He had to start saying, you have to help me. You have to provide, you have to blah, blah, blah. And when they said no, just don't interfere and let me do my thing. And they agreed. So.
Did they? That's
we'll
what
see.
They said.
We have 3 episodes.
I know.
What do you think, Alberto?
First thought was that one of them is gonna turn. Probably.
Oh, definitely. Someone's
at gonna
least
turn.
One. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Clatoonians for sure. Yeah.
But Boba, like the last scene shows, he's not stupid either. It's like, they're not dumb. They all see that my deal is better than whatever the price might offer. But I still need to build my muscle, and then we get the call back to to Mandalorian. So he's not kind of hashing all his bets, putting all his eggs in one basket on this deal. He's, I'm going to keep doing my side stuff. And if they double cross me, which like we said, one of them might, I'll be ready. But I don't trust those guys. A little bit like Gustavo said, first time that we saw them, and then they're already complaining to Boba. It's like, no, right. I don't trust them, because if the Pikes go there, hey, I'm going to offer you three free spice trains to tell me about Boba soon. Okay, yeah, I'll help you. But yeah. Whatever. It's Boba knows what he's doing. Fennec, like for the third time, do you trust them? Yeah, whatever. Let's go get someone else. We got enough credits to buy more muscle, so let's go find some. Mm-hmm. Which I don't think it's Mando.
I don't think it's Mando, but I think it might be Mandalorians.
I mean, they played the Mandalorians theme.
Yeah, so but I don't think it's gonna be. Yeah. I rarely,
and my coworker Eric likes to talk about Goose and Eric guarantees, and I rarely give out a Goose guarantee, but in this case, I'm 100% sure, and this might come to bite me in the ass, but I am 100% sure that it's Din Djarin.
He might
have some other ones tag along, but
to me, it doesn't fit he's story the that Din Djarin is going to be interested in underworld stuff happening Tatooine. I think right now he's dealing with the Darksaber and Bo-Katan and ruling a planet. And I know it might not fit too much with playing the Mandalorian theme at the end, but I still think that Cobb Vanth, as the Marshal of Mos Pelgo, might be interested in bringing peace to this other town. He has history with the Tuskens. Hey, my tribe got killed. You have a new tribe with Tuskens. You're a marshal down here. I need help corralling all these people. I'm there. And that's who I'm hashing my bets on.
I want Cobb Vanth as well. Yeah. Oh, I want Boba Fett to make him an identical set of armor so that he can wear like the same armor as Boba, but with a red scarf.
Red scarf.
Red and black.
Or they could make a different, like a red colored with green scarf.
Invert the colors. Yeah.
I think we should have one more flashback to him getting the following Din Djarin
the armor,
to find the armor. And it might show him seeing Cobb Vanth with his armor, and then it going ties to finding Cobb Vanth in present time to see if they help each other. But we'll see. But it does make sense to Mando. I don't know.
Yeah. The reason I think that they're done with the flashbacks is because you get that one scene from, you know, that last clip when he like destroys Bib Fortuna, sits on the throne, and then you have that awesome scene of him sitting there with this helmet, and then it transitions to his face inside of the Bacta tank, which I thought was just cinematographically amazing. So I think they just like caught up with where they were. Yeah. So
and the robots have to be with you, like the robot said.
You're completely healed already, but to that point
I might be wrong, but I think they're done with flashbacks. We'll see what happens in the next few episodes. I'm just putting it on the record. I think they might be done
for flashbacks.
I think the interesting thing about when the droid says you're completely healed is that one, Fennec comes back, she's like, oh, what about the mental scars or whatever she says,
right?
It's like, I mean, obviously that's more thematic than
well, yeah, and we've always said that everybody in Star Wars needs mental health.
Everyone needs a psychologist or psychiatrist.
Yes.
But I think the one way to bring back a flashback, because I'm almost sure, I wouldn't put a guarantee on it, but I'm almost sure that we were going to have like at least one more flashback. And one way to do it is that you're going to have like some battle or something where Boba gets like wounded or something, and he needs to take a little dip.
Get back. Just a little dip. Yeah.
On the back, just a 30-minute one, not like all the sessions he's needed, but one where he gets his final flashback, and that's it. But I think with that, actually, that's a good point.
Wait, before we're up, now I have an existential question. Why is there a human-sized Bacta tank on?
My theory is that he followed, because Fennec tells him in the flashback that you should get a
that he needs tank.
I think he went on Amazon Prime and just once he got Jabba's palace, he changed his address on his Amazon Prime account. Just got one.
Okay.
He said that he's got the credit. So Why not? Because that's amazing. I guarantee that that back the tank was not for Jabba the Hutt.
No. I mean, how amazing is the design on that chamber, by the way? Because it's like this horrible, you always see the palace like something stark and metal and just horrible. And that chamber is just open and breezy and fantastic. So
that's how it's for love. It's for love.
Yeah. It's for love.
It's, it's for Fennec. That's where it's, that's what it's for.
That's Fennec's nest.
Because we finally got the balcony scene and all we talked about was war.
Well, yeah, I was a little disappointed. I thought there would be a little more, you know.
Again,
a little
more I'm
gazing.
I want Fennec to be the Daimyo and Boba Fett just stays at the nest, just
taking care of the kids, taking care of the Rancor.
Taking care of the Rancor. He'll bring that Manta again, the little droids. Take care of the animals.
Yeah, she'll be like, "Hey, Boba, I need you to get some groceries. Maybe kill a couple people on the way." He's like, "What, well, honey?"
So far, he's been showing a very nurturing side, and she's been the more aggressive side, which I'm all in for.
Yeah.
So
it's a binary. So like they're just complimenting each other, and they're it's like what we were talking with Ty, and she was upset about the diet and the Force and Rise of Skywalker because we were talking about Joseph Campbell and the monomyth, and she's like, no, Joseph Campbell doesn't talk about dyads. When two parts come together like that, it's a monad because they're the two that are one because they complement each other and they are the one. So hopefully they
Trinity
let them
and
kiss.
Neo.
They, exactly. Oh my God, I love Matrix Resurrections. We can talk about it in another episode. But do we want to, I mean, we did a little theorizing on what might happen in the next couple of episodes. So do we want to like, kind of to wrap this up, do we want to like go around and maybe give some thoughts of what we think might happen in chapter 5 and beyond. Alberto, why don't we start with you?
I think we'll get one more flashback. I hope if we get, let's say we only get one, that there's something else with Kamino. Mm-hmm. Why did they went to Kamino for two flashbacks and then it's just the same scene, they just cut it off for those two ones, maybe just to show the absentee father. But I think that needs to play a little bit more, maybe show another flashback of Kamino, maybe seeing Django or something. And I, even if there's a flashback, I hope it's a short one. And then the episode, the present time kind of picks up that storyline, not in terms of, oh, it needs to be quicker, or it just kind of extended a little bit more. And I guess I don't know if he'll leave Tatooine. A lot of people expecting him to leave the planet. I'm not kind of on board for that. It might happen, but I don't know. I think we're just going to find out who comes in, if it's Din Djarin or whoever. And I think chapter 6, I don't think it's going to be chapter 5. Chapter 5, we're going to deal a little bit with the Pikes. But then chapter 6, I think we're going to find out who the big bad is out there, which I'm still hoping is Crimson Dawn and Kira kind of playing everything. We know kind of the Mayordomo said, which I love that character. He's so stupid, but I love him.
Because he's so sleazy and he's so believable in the way that he's so like greasy and oily and
and arrogant. No, it's like whatever.
Yeah, but I love the mayor, and the mayor promised it to the Pikes. We don't know if that's true.
Yeah,
but I think there's someone else out there that's gonna be revealed. I think episode 6 and then 7 deal with the fallout. There's gonna be hopefully Crimson Dawn because there's the Kira Renaissance out there. Bring Kira in, and the one that's really behind all this. Why did the Hutts leave so early? Doesn't make sense for them to give up that quickly. Black Santa didn't kill you. Okay, bye. So I think we're gonna deal a little bit more with the Pikes, and then kind of see in episode 6. Now the Pikes were just kind of low level. There's someone higher up, and hopefully bring Crimson Dawn at that point.
Mo, what do you think?
I want it to be more just local, you know, just keep it, you know, not bring Din Djarin, just, you know, they have money and they know a bunch of bounty hunters. So that will be the next, like, just bring bounty hunters, make it.
Cad Bane.
Oh my God.
He's
my number one, but at this point, I don't think it's happening.
But
you know what? You know what? Maybe it happens. So let's put it out there. We can see Cad
Bane. Positive
at the
vibes
last episode.
To the universe. Come on, Cad Bane in live action.
Or maybe we don't get to see Cad Bane in this season. We just hear Disperse.
Right, in season 2.
And maybe like the voice 2. Or something. Yeah.
It's like, or yeah, long time no see kid or something.
Nani, what do you think?
Oh my God. I actually agree with, I kind of want to say there's no flashbacks, but there, if there are flashbacks of Kimino, I would be really happy because like Alberto said, like those looked gorgeous and it doesn't make sense for you to use like that one little clip twice and then not do anything else ever again with Kimino. And it, because it looks amazing. And there's, I've loved from the beginning the fact that, you know, he comes from this water planet and now he's found his real home in a desert planet. And I feel like there's a way that they might be able to bring that together because they did it with the tree and the water and everything. So there might be something there. The Mando theme was very strong at the end of the episode. I don't think it's going to be Din. I don't. But I think it might be Mandalorians because there are mercenary groups of Mandalorians and Fennec says she knows that they have the credits, so she might be able to get a band of Mandalorians to come to their aid. So that's what I'm thinking it's going to be. I also really hope that we do get Crimson Dawn in because I think that would be really cool. It was really cool to see the Pikes already in live action, so to see more of Crimson Dawn and maybe Kira come back would be really cool. But, you know, if it's done in the right way, because you don't want them to take over the story, just, you know, you know what I mean? Just kind of to bring the story forward and kind of show Boba, I guess, in his best light, because I feel like he's been struggling a lot with his old self and his Tusken self. And I want to see him like completely embrace both sides. And then we can see a truly, truly badass Boba Fett. That's what I want to see at the end.
I like what you said because it gave me an idea for my prediction. You were talking about Kimino and I was like, oh, there's going to be like one more flashback scene. So there might be just one, maybe two. But now that you were talking about Kimino, I'm like, oh, yeah, it makes sense. And it probably won't happen. But you were talking about it. I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, my fanboy mind just went off. And I'm like, yeah, the last flashback scene isn't a Tatooine flashback. It's a Kimino flashback. And it's Temuera Morrison digitally de-aged to be Jango Fett talking to Boba Fett. And it's just a scene of them, you know, talking about whatever it is that clone fathers and clone children talk about. As, you know, and we get to see Tem dressed as Jango Fett one more time in Kimino.
Yeah.
I hope that happens.
That would break also, my heart, though.
Even, you know,
break my heart.
Like, even though I want to see the flashback with, you know, Boba going to Mos Pelgo to find out where the armor is, I kind of like, after you saying that, I'm like, oh, I kind of want to see de-aged Temuera as Jango Fett now. But then based on that, yeah, we've been hoping for Crimson Dawn, but now, based on what everyone has said, maybe Crimson Dawn is the bad guy set up for season two.
Yeah.
It's like the Pikes are the bad guys for like this season, but after Boba takes care of everything, they say, oh no, there's something bigger.
There's actual.
This.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, Pikes are like the intimate story here where like he brings justice to Tatooine and liberates Tatooine and, you know, somehow brings the Tuskens back to Boba's palace, and you know there's free, you know there's some redemption for the Tuskens, but then he realizes that there's a bigger threat than the Pikes. It's the threat is Crimson Dawn, and that is the thing that he must do in season two. It's like he liberated Tatooine from the Pikes, but now he must liberate other oppressed people from the, you know, from the grip of Crimson Dawn. And then you don't get Kira, you don't get Emilia Clarke in this season, but you get it potentially hinted for the next season. And I'm probably completely wrong about everything.
We're usually wrong about
everything. As we usually are, but we had fun with it.
We even had a goose guarantee.
There's no goose guarantee on this one. Only on Din Djarin. That's the only one.
I mean, does anybody think there's any possibility that we're going to be able to see an Omega in live action?
At this point.
Ever?
At this point.
No.
This one.
Oh, this ever? One. That's a different
ever.
Story.
I said ever.
Oh, ever? Yeah, I think there's a chance.
That's
but this, right now?
I mean, if it does happen, it'll be like really out of the...
It'll be completely out of left field. Yeah, I know. Because it has nothing to do with the actual story. I wanted to phrase the question as in ever.
I mean, unless that's the flashback we get, it's not with Django, it's with Omega.
Mm-hmm. Somehow.
Which doesn't make sense because it's not been set up.
Yeah.
So maybe it happens in season two, if there's a season two. But I don't think it's happening in season one. Right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, do we know? I thought it was supposed to be just the one season. Is there a possibility for there being more?
They've never claimed it was a limited series. But they haven't said that.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you, Alberto.
No, same thing that Gustavo said. I don't think they've actually said if it's one season or multiple. I don't think they said. Yeah. I always imagined it just to be one. I thought it was just need to be one story. But it depends just how it's setting up for the end. But I don't know.
Right. Because even if it had been announced as a limited series, if it's successful enough, they can be like, hey, guess what? Season two.
Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't that what happened with Mando? I'm pretty sure. Was it season one of Mando? Mando was solid.
Always meant to be like, okay, let's see.
Well, anyway, I think we've discussed the episode enough. <And some. laughs> I think last thoughts from everyone before we sign off.
Very excited for what's to come the last three episodes. I think this is what a lot of us were expecting. This kind of, how is he going to deal with the crime scene in Tatooine? And I think now we're going to see that in this back half of the series.
Yeah, I think the important thing about Book of Boba Fett and just any media, not just Star Wars media, is, you know, just let's be receptive to what we're watching. Mm-hmm. Try to like accept it at face value and try to see what we can get from it. And if it's not, you know, if it's not jiving with you, there's no problem with dropping it. And just moving on to the next thing that actually brings you joy. Like Marie Kondo says, don't keep things that don't bring you joy. And if Book of Boba Fett isn't doing that for you, just drop it and find the next show.
What about you, Mo?
I want to see it more of the present. I feel like we've all I love the flashbacks, but I think at this moment it might be a detriment to the continuity of the show if we're not shown more of like the present and you know it could be like two different like stories. You could have Boba's main quest and like the kids having their side quest, and you can have a full episode being the present, like, and not be feeling overwhelmed of like, oh, everything's the present. So, I'm excited. I'm liking it. I've everything so far. I like how they're building, like a lot of like story and backstory into things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's possible this might not just be one season.
Mm-hmm. Nani, what about you?
Like I said, I would love for if we do something from the past a little bit, but not anymore. I think we might be done. And I think they might start putting more power into the present and actually start gearing that up. I think they did on purpose the flashbacks more interesting so people would care. Right. Because if mostly flashbacks is the past. No, I want to know what's happening now. So I think they purposely made them more interesting so people would care. So the story would make sense of how Boba like made his transition. And now that we caught up with him, I think we're going to get more present stories. And I think they're going to be more focused on that. So I think we're going to get more of that. That's what I'm hoping anyway. But so far, especially this week's episode, the second episode had been my favorite, and probably on rewatch, it will still be because there's a lot of nuance and beauty to it. But just in terms of fun watching it, this episode was great. I mean, the images, the Slave One just like laying there, and Boba, like when he first sees it, tears in his eyes from seeing the ship again. I mean, there was so much emotion and fun, and they did a majestic job of combining the puppets with the CGI, with the costumes, with the ambiance. It was almost seamless. It was fantastic. The only thing I complained about is the beak, and not because it looks bad, just because I don't like the beak. It's just because I don't like the beak. I think it's unnecessary.
Which is okay.
Yeah. That's it.
It's okay.
Right. But with that, I think we're pretty much covered, yeah. Right? But before we sign off, Alberto, why don't you tell us where everyone can find you? I mean, thanks for joining us. It's been, you know, very insightful. I know we said we were going to keep it a little brief, but as always, you know, good conversation.
We failed at things keeping extend, it brief.
So thank you so much. So if everyone watching and listening wants to like listen to more of Alberto, he has a fantastic channel and he's going to plug everything out so you can find him.
Yeah. I mean, it happens. We have four Puerto Rican talking. It's not going to be a short conversation, even if we try to wrap it up 30 minutes ago. But no, thank you a lot for inviting me, having me here. Great show for you guys always when I listen to it. So yeah, keep doing what you're doing and thanks for inviting me. Hopefully I'll be back soon and I'll have you guys on my show again at some point soon. Like you mentioned, I have my own show, Radio Rebellion Podcast, that if you want to hear me keep talking about this episode, join us on Saturday at 5 p.m. Mm-hmm. Eastern. So I'll be there with Oti from El Podcast de Sidewars, another Puerto Rican, and with Candace from Geeky Waffle. We're going to be breaking down this episode and then new episodes every Saturday at 5 p.m. And then I release them as audio podcasts on Monday mornings. Also, I have a website, RadioRebellionPodcast.wordpress.com, where you can check all my book reviews for The High Republic, which I'm loving, and some other news out there. Yeah, it's just the best. And then on Twitter and Instagram, you can follow us at Radio Rebel Pod. And yeah, I think that's it. Again, thanks for having me here. A lot of fun.
Yeah, and for everyone watching, we'll obviously be leaving links to all of those in the description below so that you don't have to memorize it. You'll be able to just go down, click, copy, paste, whatever you do. Mm-hmm. So please make sure to check it out.
Pues mil gracias again, Alberto, for joining us. This was really fun. This was great. We are Triad of the Force. You can find us wherever podcasts can be found. Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. Just search for Triad of the Force and you will find us. We have t-shirts.
Everything except TikTok. Yeah.
And Discord. I'm too old for TikTok.
Yeah.
I'm too old for all social media, actually. But anyway, if you like us, like, subscribe, leave comments, let us know what you want to talk about. But till next time, may the force be with you.